right. Well, hey, welcome to VentureCast. I'm David Hornick from August Capital.
And I'm Howard Hartenbaum, also from August Capital.
And it is, what, August 26th, which means we got kids back at school, we're heads down and focused.
And we have to reset our lights at our house so that they come on earlier and earlier every night.
That is a problem.
There's no going home after work and going for a bike ride anymore because it's getting darker.
Howard, I don't get home until 9, 10 at night because I'm here working away.
Yeah.
And you go and you go. You're going home, what, 7:30?
Well, no, I mean, you got to have dinner with the family and stuff. I usually go home like 6:30.
I'm with you. Yeah. I'm with you. How's your summer been?
It's been good. You know, things come in waves in our business. Like, you see all these companies and you go, I don't just see the right one, and I'm never going to find another one. I'm going to be lonely and single for my entire life. And then all of a sudden, two beautiful companies walk in on the same day, and you're like, wow.
That's true. That's you. You have two super interesting companies you're talking to. And
one's called Company A, and the other one's called Company B.
Exactly. And they're fascinating, and they're likely to make millions and billions of dollars.
Or not.
But I think it's amazingly cyclical. You know, I mean, I've done 5 deals in the last 12 months, which is nutty. Like, you know, you would have never said, would you have said in November, oh, do 3 more deals over the course of the next 6 months? No way. And yet they were all interesting. And, you know, hey, you had to sign off on them. You must have thought they were worth doing.
Yeah. And I only did 2, and I feel like a slacker.
Yeah, well, you are compared to me.
Well, we got a partner who did none. So let's slack on him for a while.
Yeah, right, exactly. Maybe he should, you're 2 awesome companies, maybe he should do both of them.
Yeah.
All right, we'll get that. We'll work on that.
But it is, you know, it's that, like, when you're dating, you know, when you're a young man, if you're looking for a girlfriend, you're never going to find one. But when you're not looking, suddenly one sits next to you on the chairlift at the ski resort. And here it's like you're looking and then you're kind of frustrated and then you go to some event and you meet some entrepreneur and he says, I figured out how to make you grow purple hair. And you're going, cool.
I want purple hair. Well, speaking of that, like, so I know that, few weeks ago, there was the Y Combinator demo day. And, you know, Y Combinator is the program, I guess.
Last week.
It was last week?
Yes.
Seriously? Where was I? I guess I wasn't here. You got to go,
18th,
got to
19th,
check it out.
I think. Yeah, they have it down in Mountain View at the Y Combinator office. And if any of you aren't familiar with Y Combinator, it's run by Paul Graham and Jessica Livingston. And they put money into like 2-3 person concepts to get them off the ground to build a product and a consumer product and test it in the market. And they've been doing this for a few years and they must have 150 or so.
Over the course, yeah, they do two tranches, right? They usually do a summer tranche and a winter tranche. So let's say it's 20 per, you know, 25 per time is 50 times however many years they've been at it. And
yeah. So I did go to their, they have it over 2 days and the format is great. They have like 4 hours of pitches with each pitch is 4 minutes.
Four minutes.
And there's a
think about that. Next time you're planning to pitch anyone on your business, see if you can do it in 4 minutes.
And that includes introductions and a demo.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I gotta say that they do a fantastic job at prepping and practicing, and those guys and girls get up and they give a 4-minute pitch that tells you you're either interested or you're not. And you have enough information to say, yeah, I don't really want to meet you again, or I want to meet you again. And anybody who can do it as good as that, I think, has a great leg up. Sometimes we see companies and you're half an hour in and you're still not quite sure what they do.
Yeah, remember, actually, you had just joined the firm. I don't know if you remember this, but you had just joined August. You'd been with us for, I don't know, less than a month. And it was a meeting and there were maybe 4 partners in the meeting. And it was one of these instances where they were going on and they weren't saying what they were doing. And everybody was kind of looking and frustrated. And all of a sudden you said, hang on a second. What do you do? Like, what
I
do
said
you
that.
Do? Yeah, you do. And I remember looking at my partners and going, oh my. Like, what? Because, you know, you just, hey, you just sort of wait and see if you get to it. And you had just gotten to the breaking point, like, seriously, it's been a half hour.
I couldn't take it anymore.
What do you do? What is it you do? But these guys, if you don't know in the first minute what they do, then, you know, that's
shocking. I'll give them 4 minutes, because sometimes they want to talk about who they are or where they grew up or a little bit or how you got to meet them. But the Y Combinator guys, in 4 minutes, you can say, not my cup of tea, or I would love to talk with those guys some more and I want to go and try their product. So, you know, I saw a bunch of companies. I went, they have 2 days. I went on the second day, and it's the same group of companies, and they all pitched twice.
Oh, is that right? Oh, I was thinking. So everybody pitches across the 2 days.
And the two-day thing
is just because there's so much demand. Like, the whole venture community. I bet you every, you know, venture firm in Sand Hill Road was represented over one of those 2 days.
Most. But I think they break it up. I think the first day is for people who have some affiliation with Y Combinator, have invested in a Y Combinator company before or something like that. And the second
People they like.
So I went to the second
day. Howard got to go to the second day.
I was invited to the first day, but I turned them down.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
and I've been going for a couple of years now, and it's getting more polished, and the quality, I would say, of the companies is improving, and maybe because Paul and Jessica have refined their screening process, maybe because they've changed what they're, you know, where they're recruiting from in the process. But pretty much all the companies that got up there, you know, I'm a natural skeptic. I think no matter what you can say to me is not going to be interesting. And pretty much all of them said something that was interesting, maybe not to me, but interesting to somebody and relevant. And they were building something. They all had users. They all had a problem they were solving. They all had built something that worked and was functional. They were across, you know, the map of different types of things you could do. Some of them may be great businesses over time, and some might just be short-lived things. But I think it was... They're doing greater stuff there.
Yeah, no, I talked. My recollection is talking to Paul and Jessica about it. Their view is that they have learned a lot about how to find the right sets of people, and that they're finding, you know, that they're first of all, they, you know, as we know, if you can't fund someone unless you know about them, and so part of the battle is just to hear about lots of interesting companies, or in this instance, lots of interesting people. So I think because they've been so successful and smart and good about it, then they're hearing about a lot more. They're getting a lot more applicants and a lot more interesting people. I know teams of people who have the beginnings of companies, are really smart, and then apply to Y Combinator to sort of work on that idea and rev it. And I think it's in part because, you know, as you say, you know, Paul and Jessica, by the time they've finished beating on you for demo day, you have a heck of a presentation for those 4 minutes. And I've seen them. I mean, I remember, I think it was a couple years ago that I had dinner with them the night before one of these demo days, and Paul showed up at 10 or something because he was still grilling people until, you know, till 10 at night. So I think that it's the high, you know, the high value piece. People think, oh, these guys only invest $10,000 or $15,000 or whatever it is, but that's totally missing the point. Like, this is it's a summer boot camp, and what you get is an incredible community of people and a boot camp and a bunch of value out of that. And then after that, you also get, you know, a boatload of full of VCs listening to what you're up to and hopefully funding you. So, you know, it's pretty awesome. I was bummed that I couldn't make it to this one. And
well, have no fear. I went in your stead.
That's good. I appreciate that. I'm glad.
So those guys, when they come out, they're more polished in presentation than many companies who've taken $5 million, $10 million,
yeah, totally,
and spend 30 minutes and I have to yell, what do you do? I can't take it anymore. So if any of you have not been there before and you're investors, you know, contact them. Maybe you can go next year. Surrounded in the audience, there were all sorts of VCs I knew, from big firms, from small firms. And, you know, I read on TechCrunch the day before a list of the other firms that were there the prior day, and it was just an incredible list. And so if you're an entrepreneur and it's like a sales job. You have an idea and you're building something and you're excited about it, you got to find the right person for you too. And what better way than to get it in front of 40 different VCs, and maybe all of them or maybe just one of them will come up and say, hey, this interests me. And just because you have a great company doesn't mean it will interest every single person that you're presenting to. So I think it's great, and I thought there was some pretty neat companies in there, and I'm going to get in touch with them.
Company B. Perhaps you're discussing Company B.
Perhaps
I don't know.
Company B.
It's hard to know.
Anyway, thanks, Paul and Jessica.
So Paul and Jessica also introduced me to
Company C,
the FriendFeed folks early on before they built FriendFeed. And
was that a Y Combinator?
I don't think they were a Y Combinator. I think they just were. Paul was friends with Paul, and so they had they had a relationship. But sort of interesting stuff going on with FriendFeed. As they reported now, FriendFeed got bought by Facebook, and I have since heard through the grapevine that they were in conversations to be acquired by Twitter, which that's pretty interesting, right? You think of them as competitors, and so, oh man, whoever gets FriendFeed can compete with compete with Twitter, and yet here's Twitter saying, well, maybe we'll buy you. And in fact, the person who gave me this information was saying that, oh man, they really should have. Like, if you were Twitter, there's real value there. So what do you think? Was it acquire the team, or does Facebook want to fight with Twitter, or what's that all about?
I mean, FriendFeed by itself is a great product, and whether or not Facebook is thinking about Twitter, I'm sure they are thinking about it, but I think they're kind of looking forward and saying, what do we want? What is cool, and what are good teams and great products? I think they just looked at it from that perspective. They don't seem like particularly reactive guys to me.
Yeah, it doesn't seem, obviously there's this question of, oh, they've changed the feed and the feed is more like a Twitter experience or whatever. And yet, my kids are not using FriendFeed because they feel like it's a Twitter killer. My kids are using FriendFeed. What am I talking about? My kids are not using Facebook because they feel like it's a Twitter alternative. They feel like it's this is their communications platform. And I think that the Facebook folks are just saying, look, as real time becomes more important, and as we think about real time, these guys have done some pretty great stuff around incorporating a ton of third parties into the feed to make it, to make it all come together in a single place. And if you're, clearly, if you're Facebook, you want that single place to be Facebook. So it's pretty smart, I think.
Well, your comment about your kids, I think, is pretty interesting. I have kids and they use Facebook, but they don't use Twitter. And what does that mean for Twitter?
Yeah, I mean, maybe there's a big business to be had
in a Twitter for
in
kids.
Well, maybe that's true, but I don't think that's the experience kids care about.
Like, my
kids,
kidder.
Kidder. For those of you who are listening, we have already trademarked kidder.
Thank you for the legal advice.
Is that kitter? K-I-T-T-E-R.
Did you know that there's Evan Williams bourbon on the market?
No.
I bought a bottle of it. It's in my office. I'll show it to you later. I bought it for Evan, and of course, I'm sure he'd heard of this. So I sent Evan an email and said, hey, Evan, I'm sure you've heard of this stuff called Evan Williams bourbon, but I bought you a bottle of it. And he emailed back. He goes, did you get the single malt or the...
Yeah, like, that's great and all, but, so Evan's a new father. Maybe he could use it.
So it's in my office. And if Evan, if you're ever driving by Sand Hill Road, I have a bottle of your bourbon for you. And this has not been a plug for Evan Williams bourbon. But if
yeah, right. But if they would like to pay us some promotional fee...
Maybe what Evan Williams bourbon should do is they should get the Evan Williams signature edition of Evan Williams bourbon.
Yeah, sort of like...
And then market it to the Twitter user group.
Right, exactly. Sort of the same way that Stormhook wine has forever been appealing to the TechCrunch crowd.
Yeah.
And they always sponsor the TechCrunch party here, and they have the wine. One party we had here out on our patio in August, they shipped in 40 cases or something of this wine. I mean, it was the truckloads full. They just kept bringing it and bringing it and bringing it. Must have been more than 40 cases. It was some crazy amount. And we had a bunch left over, and I brought it up. I went to Tim O'Reilly's Foo Camp that year, and I brought a bunch of it with me to be drunk there. And then and Arrington was there. He's like, "What are you doing with my wine?"
So you sold it to him.
I said, "I'm giving it away." Like, oh man, what are you up to?
Yeah.
So now speaking of Twitter and naming, or Ev Williams and naming, I'm sure this wasn't like the number one thing you watched on Tech Meme, but Twitter had applied for the trademark in the word tweet. They wanted to own TweetTM, but it turns out that the trademark office denied it. They said that there were too many alternative uses, and so prior uses, etc. And so they couldn't get the trademark. And I don't know, I'm sure that their lawyers are thinking about how they can go back at it, because
maybe if they put an H in it.
Tweet.
Tweet.
they should hire you for marketing, Howard. Yeah. That's what
you know, I never understood that marketing stuff. You hire a guy, you pay him a lot of money, he spends a lot of money, and he says, I did my job. I spent the money.
That's
and you're like,
marketing.
And what did you do for that? Oh, trust me, I did my job.
See, but good marketing, I got to tell you, I'm an investor in Splunk. And I remember when we changed the
name.
Does
that have an H in it?
Splunk. S-P-L-U-N-K. And I remember when they proposed changing the name to Splunk. And, oh, it's great. It's like spelunking, and it's fun, and we like the energy, and it sounds good, and whatever else. And I sort of went, well, all right. It's an enterprise product, but we'll see. And then they started doing all this quirky marketing. I don't know if you've seen the Splunk t-shirts, but they're like taking the SH out of IT and, because ninjas are too busy and all this great stuff. And their t-shirts are awesome and their marketing is just awesome. Like people love, if you go to a tech trade show, the Splunk t-shirts are highly sought after.
And they probably have very attractive women in their booths with a big poster that you can get signed.
Sadly, I think they don't. I think they have a bunch of IT nerds that are handing out, because ninjas are too busy t-shirts. But, good marketing can really do great things for you. So,
yeah, one thing that young companies do is, in our area, we see a lot of really interesting young technical guys. And whenever they have money, the only thing they can conceive of spending it on is hiring more technical guys. And if you say to them, well, how much is your marketing budget? And they're, maybe you should have $500,000 in your marketing budget. And they're like, but that's foreign engineers. Everything is compared to the number of engineers they can hire because they don't have the experience of doing that. And it seems like a waste of money considering you could buy engineers instead. And so we end up trying to have that discussion with a lot of companies and saying, what can marketing do for you? And what is marketing? And can we introduce you to some professional marketers who've been very successful, and you can talk to them, and usually they come away and say, I'd rather spend the money on engineers, but some of them...
Yeah, that's still right. But sometimes that's right, right? I mean, that was certainly Google's bent for a long, long time.
Yeah.
But I agree, in a lot of instances, you fund a business that is an interesting business, technically interesting, but if it doesn't reach a market, who cares?
Yeah.
And it's not going to be sold on features, right? It's going to be sold on, this is a great idea that solves a problem, but who, the people who have the problem better know about it.
Yeah, I mean, like Twitter, I mean, their whole success is a result of having one good marketing guy. I just make this up. I mean a great product, sorry.
One great
Do they
marketing
have any
guy.
Marketing guys there?
Well, they. I think they
well,
would argue they're all
guys.
Marketing
yeah,
guys,
Evan
right?
is a fantastic
right?
promoter.
They're all marketing guys, but, look, if you can get superstar movie stars and sports stars or whatever to start promoting your thing for free, that's an awesome model, right? I mean, I'm friends with the guys down at CAA and the agency, and they realize, hey, their superstars have a lot of value and they can bring a lot of value to these companies. And so they're starting to work with folks, like the Funny or Die deal with Will Ferrell. Look, without Will Ferrell, would anyone have gone to Funny or Die in the first instance? But man, that landlord video was beyond funny, and Will Ferrell's hilarious, and so it got the ball rolling. Now, how much do you think Will Ferrell owns of Funny or Die? I don't know what the answer is to that. And how much is it worth? Is it worth 5% of the company, or 2%, or 40%?
In that case, probably 100%.
Well, that would be bad for Sequoia, since I think they own some of it, right? Yeah. They've invested a bunch of money, right? So, anyway. So how did we get here, Howard?
It's this meandering road. And
yeah, exactly.
I'm just
I hope they're meandering. I hope they're staying a straight and narrow if they're listening to this while driving. No, we were talking about Facebook and acquiring FriendFeed. And, there are a couple of interesting things to me about Facebook and trying to acquire companies, right? The first is, it's got to be tough to try and acquire companies if you're Facebook. Not because people don't want to work there. Of course people want to work there. But you don't have enough cash to buy hot companies, right? You can't say, oh, I'll give
you
200.
They will after they go public.
When they go public, they're going to be in a great position. And I suspect that their corp and biz dev guys are just dying for them to go public so that they can, so they have this, liquid stock that they can use to acquire everything on the planet. But right now they have to acquire you with illiquid stock that's being valued at what? Somewhere between $7 and $10 billion. And so how much of that do they have to give you if you think your company's pretty successful and interesting? it was reported that FriendFeed got $50 million, some combination of cash and stock. And, you know,
congratulations to those guys.
No, awesome guys. I mean, look, I would have loved to fund those guys. It's a little bit like when the StumbleUpon guys decided to go to be sold to eBay, and I said, oh, darn, there it goes. So whenever you're ready to spin FriendFeed out, we'd be happy to talk. We've got some experience in that now with StumbleUpon. No, it was they're a great team, and one of the things that I've heard about Zuckerberg is that he's a really good recruiter, that he can recruit smart people, he can get them engaged and energized about the business. And if you looked at the reports about the FriendFeed acquisition, there were pictures of the night that they signed the documents. They signed the documents at someone's house, maybe Paul's house, and they had pictures of Zuckerberg there, and, you know, all smiles, everybody hanging out. I mean, that is the kind of hands-on CEO leadership you want. If it's something that you think is meaningful and valuable to your company, then get the CEO down there and hanging out and saying, hey, we need you guys, and there's a big value here, and we're going to make this worth a pile of money. But if you're getting stock at, you know, at a $7 billion valuation, right, you have to assume that it's not going to be, you know, 100x that. So what do you assume? Maybe if it gets to 70 billion, then it's a 10x that or whatever? I mean,
yeah, but think of all the guys who sold their companies for 1% of Google before the IPO.
Well, Twitter, Ev made a ton of money by selling
Blogger.
Blogger, yeah. Thank you. And there were a few. There were a few that went that way. So if you think it's going to be as big as Google, then, you know, great.
Yeah. Well, with Facebook acquisitions, I read about Tipjoy.
Yeah.
Which I thought was kind of an interesting yet controversial topic to bring up.
Yeah, totally.
And if for those of you who aren't familiar, at least the reporting on it, whether it's true or not, I really don't know, was that there was some interest for Facebook to potentially acquire the company, and it fell apart. And soon after, the core founder and one other guy were hired by Facebook, which was basically the end of Tipjoy. And if there were any other suitors for the company, which might get some money back for the other shareholders, the investors, for example, that was basically gone, because the main guy and the founder and the main engineering guy were now gone. And, you know, that's kind of an interesting topic.
Yeah, right. I mean, what is your...
you put your foot in your mouth.
No, I mean, but like, what is your fiduciary duty, right? You have a duty. I assume that the founder of the company was on the board. And, you know, as a board member, you have a fiduciary duty to the company. And so what is that duty? I mean, I'm sure he tried to sell the company. And maybe the case was that when they didn't buy the company, that there really wasn't an opportunity to do anything more.
Yeah.
And so they were going to shut down the company anyway, but you're certainly right that, you know, once the core people leave the company, there's not a whole lot left. And
in this case, though, I think if you're like the founder of the company, so this is my opinion, not August Capital's opinion, but my personal opinion is, in that situation, if the founder were to then leave and take a job, so as to do the right thing in that situation, whatever stock that he was given by the acquiring company, he would divvy that up with his other shareholders on a pro rata basis, just so that nobody, you know, if he was given $1 million worth of stock, hypothetically, it might have been $1,000 worth of stock, $100 worth of stock. If he had owned 20% of the company at the very end, then he takes 20 and he divvies up the rest, and nobody could ever claim later that there was any issue there. But, I mean, I don't know the guy. I don't know any of the details.
Yeah.
But with what little I know, I could imagine if that guy decides to go and try and start another company in the future, it will be very, very hard to raise money or work with partners where equity is involved, because the other partners may say, oh, I work with this guy, I take risk, and then I get nothing.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's an interesting I think it's an interesting challenge. But I think, you know, at the end of the day, if – like we say, we don't know what went down. And if it turns out there wasn't an opportunity and the company is closing down and they said, hey, we want you to join us, you know, then, hey, what are you going to do? But I think it is a tricky situation. I mean,
very tricky.
When does the conversation with the company end? And when does the conversation with the founder begin? And what is he going to do there? And et cetera.
Yeah.
And so...
And it can be exacerbated by... You know, I don't know the financial situation, but it's quite likely maybe the guy really needed a job and he needed it immediately.
Yeah.
You know, right. To pay his mortgage or his rent or whatever, and the acquisition wasn't happening, and he had a job offer, and, you know, is his obligation to his investors where the company didn't work, or is it to his wife
or
and
his
baby?
Family. Yeah, his family.
You know, so it's really kind of, you know, without
yeah,
having
Howard,
all the...
you're trying to take food out of the baby's mouth.
No, equity.
Equity, yeah. That's right. College. Yeah. It's like the baby's college fund.
Yeah, so, I mean, we have no details on it. We just read the press, which is often not exactly having
correct.
All the proper details. But it is an interesting topic, and that's why we bring it up, because you could imagine somebody ending in a situation where later people are saying, wait, what happened here? Was there a conflict? And it's tough.
So there was another fun one, which is, you know, MySpace goes and negotiates to buy iLike. And shortly thereafter, you know, and iLike was what? I mean, I think his primary presence was on Facebook, right?
No, I think it was. It was a heavy presence on MySpace
as well.
But also a lot.
But it was on both, right? I mean, it's pretty well. Pretty
weren't they
heavy
backed by Ticketmaster last year? Two years ago?
They've been around for a while. They've gone through a number of financings. But so what happened? So they get acquired by MySpace, and then shortly thereafter, Zuckerberg says, that he likes it.
Spotify.
I'm a big fan of Spotify. Like, forget that I like. You know what I don't like is I like, but Spotify. Now, Spotify is a good company.
Yeah, Spotify is another music company based, I think it's a Swedish company.
Yeah, it's a European. It's one of the European.
Very nice design. I like Spotify too.
Do you? What's that doing for us, Howard? Well, next time you're over at the Swoopo board meeting in Germany, why don't you stop on over in Sweden or wherever they are? You know,
and check up on Spotify.
Just a quick hop, right?
So one of our partners, John Johnson, was in Sweden. And before Spotify did a financing recently, and a couple of weeks beforehand, John emailed me and said, hey, do you think I should stop off and see Spotify as long as I'm in Sweden? And I'm like, yeah, why not? And then I guess before he did, they got funded.
Darn it! We got to get to Sweden more often, eh?
Maybe Sweden in the summer is nice. Not in the winter, it's really dark and cold.
I've never been to Sweden at all.
Yeah.
I should get there.
It's nice. In the
I've
summer
only
time,
made it as far
really
as Copenhagen.
Nice. Yeah, if you like caviar, they have this Swedish caviar, which is really delicious.
Is it as salty as...
No. It's different. It's different. It's reddish color, and it's just good. And food is really good there. People are really nice. Sweden. Go Sweden.
Go. Yes. We at August Capital enjoy Sweden and like the Swedes.
So I had a... I lived in Tokyo when I was younger. And my next door neighbor was a guy who worked at Ericsson. Yeah. And we've become good friends, and we visit each other now and then. And my family visited his family at his house outside of Stockholm 4 or 5 years ago. And we come down for breakfast and have this big, beautiful wooden table. And they put out all this meat and cheese and fruits and vegetables and no dishes, no forks, no napkins. It just basically you eat everything right off of this big, but you get like a knife and you're like cutting the cheese. And you're eating and you're just like everything is with your hands.
And you just eat what you eat.
I'm like, just like, there's like no serving dishes. There's no dish. And I don't know if this is just my friends messing with me.
It was just on the table?
It was just on this big wooden table. Like it was a big...
So those if those of you from the area have any opinion, and let us know, is this the way to eat breakfast?
Or were they messing with
me? Or were they just messing with Howard?
But that's what's fun about travel sometimes. Something is just completely different.
Yep. It is
true. Where's my dish?
You know, this is not really related to that, but while I was in the Boston area over the summer, we ate on a number of occasions at Wagamama. And I just want to... Wagamama?
Wagamama. It means hard-headed.
Hard-headed in Japanese. But it's awesome. I got to tell you, if you're in Cambridge, go to Wagamama. If you're in London, go to Wagamama. It's so I would like, if someone's listening and they could fund the expansion of Wagamama to the Bay Area, if there was one in Palo Alto, it would make a fortune. I'm telling you,
It's like a big Asian, Japanese-ish noodle shop with big bench tables.
And they just put you there. You get sit next to people.
They serve you beer.
And they serve it whenever it comes out, which I like. You know what?
If five people order stuff and like only three people's food comes out, you eat while the other two have to wait.
It comes and you eat. And then when they eat, you wait for them. That's just how it goes.
Food is good.
It's good. So that's I like the Swedes and Wagamama.
And we were not sponsored by the Swedes or Wagamama today.
But like always, we're happy to accept Swedish caviar or coupons at Wagamama.
But we don't accept Swedish kroners.
No, because you know
they're worthless.
There'd be no point.
We want euros.
So there you have it. We've covered a number of topics. What else have we got? I don't know how we got off to on the Swedes, but
We were talking about acquisitions and music companies, and there's, you know, consistently more and more music companies are coming out.
Yeah,
you know, it's that's like the one area that.
It seems like
we see a lot.
Why do you think that? I think it's because people love music. Don't you think? Like, people just love music, so they can't help themselves. You get pitched on some music deal, and you go, "Oh, now that's cool. Like, that's what I want to." You know what's a cool company I did spend time with the founder of, and we didn't fund them, but I really like it, is Blip.fm. You know, it's like a community around picking music and.
What country is FM for?
I don't know. Did you see that you can get .vc? What country is .vc?
The Vatican.
Well, we should. Don't you think we should own August.vc? Now someone's going to buy it. I'm going to go check it out. We need to
trademark
before we put this up. I'm going to make sure that if it's available, we own August.vc.
Yeah, Delicious did a neat thing with how they did their and so, you know, people trying to figure out new ways of doing this, right? Like, you know, what was it? The Italian one is .it, and there was a big scramble for somebody to buy sh.it.
Who owns it?
And there's a bunch of others then in IT, which I won't go there.
Yes, exactly, like TW. Is that what you meant?
I was thinking of one that was...
Beep! We interrupt this.
How does that work, like on the radio where they have... Somebody beeping. Is there like a...
There's a delay.
There's a delay, and somebody's job is to listen. And if they hear the word, there's some delay, but they hit the beep, and then they match them back up later?
No, they do it in real time. So they hit... They go, oh, that's coming up, and then they switch over to the live feed, and beep you up.
I want that job.
Yeah. Oh, that would be awesome. Of course, they were so good with the Super Bowl that they didn't catch the little... Errant nipple
clothing costume malfunction that had been practiced 400 times.
So, you know, exactly, because that's hard to do. It's hard to.
They did it perfectly.
Hard to rip it off that way. No, so the biggest financing news in the music business is Pandora, right?
Yep.
With Greylock and David Z, who is a great investor and a good friend of ours, and putting a bunch of money into the company.
Yeah, I think it was $1 billion.
That's right. Come to VentureCast for all your misinformation. It was not $1 billion, Howard, but it was it tens of millions? I mean, it was a lot of money.
I don't know the number.
And David, I think, went on the board. And so, and you know, like, Pandora is an amazing experience and people love it. But it is interesting to wonder, like, how big can it get, and how much margin is there if you're paying licensing fees for music? And so, I think that what's amazing to me is how much better it's gotten. It used to be that you couldn't license music from the record companies for less than one of your arms and one of your legs. And now they're actually, you know, coming up with some reasonable licensing terms. So maybe there's money to be made.
Think of how simple it was 20 years ago. When you wanted to hear a song, you turned on the radio and you waited for it.
Right, when we were kids, that was totally the case. You're like, oh, I love my Sharona. Well, we'll just wait, because in the next 20 minutes, it'll be on.
And if you want to record it, you get your little tape deck next to it. You've got the ready to push the record button. There was some article in the press a couple of months ago about some mother who gave her 13-year-old son a Walkman.
Like a real Walkman.
A real Walkman. And like, the concept of like fast-forwarding and going back, and then he had to take the tape out and flip it over to hear the rest of the music on it. It was way too much for him.
I'm sure he was quite bitter, but that sounds pretty awesome. I you know, that idea of like clicking, you know, recording on your tape recorder that sits next to it. I remember we had a recording of, oh man, what was the song?
It was probably like My Sharona Timing.
Yeah, so it was. It was like it was Past the Duchy. You remember, like, Past the Duchy on the left hand side. You don't remember that song?
I'll pretend like I've never heard of it before. I think the one you were recording was it Mama Don't Take My Kodachrome? But I remember when I was a youngster and literally staying home from school and feigning sick with the radio and the tape recorder and waiting until the song came on so that I could record the song and then I could listen to it over and over. And then flip the tape over.
So what's interesting is that since then, right, there have been all these efforts to try and figure out how you can you know, there's one, which is you can buy the song, go to iTunes, buy the song. But then there are all these games around how do I get the song that I want while still pretending it's streaming, et cetera, et cetera. And it's just because that was such a pain.
Yeah.
The thing that I really want in my car, I keep asking, is I want TiVo for my radio. I mean, so often I'm driving along and then I go, wow, that was interesting, but I only half heard it. Or that was a good song and I want to hear it again. And and nobody's yet, maybe they have, but I haven't seen a good instance of a car radio that allows you to go back up and say, I want to listen to that again.
Like a radio with memory in it.
Yeah.
It just records, keeps the last,
just like have a hard drive and yeah, why don't you, you know, keep a cache and let me go back. Or better yet, you know, like store, oh, I wanted to hear Howard Stern, but I'm not driving during Howard Stern period of time. Well, why can't I listen to that? Why can't I listen to it from my drive from 11 to 1 instead of my drive from, you know, 9 to 11?
So do you think that all this explosion of music distribution companies is just pure ratio to the explosion in the number of pieces of music that are available out there? I mean, recording equipment has become cheaper. You know, digital synthesizers have become cheaper over the years. And 30 years ago, there was, you know, 500 new songs came out per week. And then now there's 500 new songs come out per hour or whatever. Is this just a sign of technology making it cheaper and easier to produce the content and distribute the content? It's just some exponential effect? Or do you think it's something else?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little bit about the open system, right? I mean, if you look at it now, there's the capacity to produce and distribute your own music in ways that didn't exist. And, you know, look, it wasn't very many years ago that any time we were pitched on a mobile business, it was, well, we can get a good relationship with Sprint, and we can get on deck, you know, and we can be distributed by Sprint because Sprint and AT&T or whatever, they had a monopoly on the distribution of these things. And suddenly there's this the iPhone comes and the App Store, and there's this explosion of applications that can be built on top of it because it's no longer this entirely closed platform. Now, there are plenty of arguments to be made that Apple's still kind of ruling with an iron fist, but as Android becomes bigger and the Palm Pre becomes a bigger platform and etc., you know, there are going to be exponentially more applications available because the distribution is better and more broadly available. And I think the same is true of the music industry, where it used to be that the major labels had a monopoly on the ability to produce and distribute music, and now that's just not the case, right? I mean, you know, there are plenty of big artists who are getting their start independently and in fact choosing to stay independent because it's just a better business for them. I like that. You got to appreciate the digital world.
Yeah, but this rapid increase in number of companies doing it just kind of says to me nobody's figured it out yet. And I think one's just going to jump out and be the solution, much like...
Don't mind my phone. I'll just go get that.
Oh, yeah, David's ringtone is pretty bizarre. He goes, hello, hello, hello. So... thinking about, you know, iTunes kind of came out of nowhere when it launched and just went so quickly and kind of took over everything, at least for a while. I think there's another one coming. I don't know what it is yet, but it's coming. Somebody's got some great idea and they're building it right now. Maybe it's a Y Combinator company. Maybe it's some entrepreneur in his back room. Maybe it's some venture capitalist who should rather be building a music company.
Well, that's why we keep looking at them, right?
Yep.
We're happy to keep looking.
I think that's about it for the day, because I have another meeting I have to go to right now.
Wow, see, Howard's burning the midnight oil.
Yeah.
All right, good talking to you, Howard.
Thank you for listening.